Hey there, I'm Maya Shunker, a cognitive scientist. I'm the host of the podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, and the author of the book, The Other Side of Change, Who We Become When Life Makes Other Plans. I've spent part of my career applying insights from my field into improvements in public policy, both in the Obama White House and at the United Nations. These days, I study the experience of navigating the unexpected changes in our personal lives. Insight one, our brains aren't wired to like uncertainty. By nature, we tend to dislike uncertainty, and a big change can inject a whole lot of uncertainty into our lives. There's a fascinating scientific study showing that people are more stressed when they think they have a 50% chance of receiving an electric shock than when they think they have a 100% chance. It's kind of wild, right? We would rather know that something bad is going to happen than to have to wrestle with any ambiguity. Another reason change is so scary is that it involves loss of some kind. By definition, we're moving from an old way of being into a new one. We may find that in addition to feeling fear, we also feel profound grief, grief for what we're losing. And when a big change happens, we can experience the loss of our self-identity. In times of change, we might think, who am I now that change has taken away what I once was? Insight two, you can become more resilient to unexpected changes by building a robust, expansive self-identity. As a kid, I was a budding concert violinist who studied at Juilliard under Itzhak Perlman. A sudden hand injury ended my dreams of becoming a professional overnight, and I distinctly remember grieving not just the loss of the instrument, but also who I was on this more fundamental level. Fast forward several decades, and I again found myself grappling with an unexpected, unwanted change in my personal life. After years of navigating numerous obstacles and disappointments, my husband and I were finally on the cusp of starting a family together. But life made other plans for us, and I found myself not just grieving pregnancy losses, but also the loss of my identity as an aspiring mom. Here's some guidance I wish I'd had during these moments. Try to define yourself not simply by what you do, to roles or labels, but to why you do those things. For example, I've discovered that a love of human connection was at the root of my musical and parenting aspirations. I am a person who thrives on emotional connection with others. And just because I lost the violin, for example, didn't mean I lost what led me to love it in the first place. I now see that it's just a matter of finding new outlets to express these parts of myself. For instance, I've been able to fulfill my desire for emotional connection through my role as an interviewer for my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, and through writing this book. It's been freeing and empowering to reimagine myself in this way. By anchoring my self-identity not just to specific pursuits, but to the underlying features of those pursuits that make me light up, I'm giving myself a softer landing the next time my what is put at risk. My why will still be there, and it can serve as a compass that guides me towards my next chapter. So I would encourage you to ask yourself, what is your why? And can you anchor your identity to that why? You can also engage in what researchers call a self-affirmation exercise. This takes only 5 or 10 minutes, and you write out all of the identities that you value about yourself that are not threatened by the change. Doing so can allow you to zoom out on your life as a whole and to gain valuable perspective, remembering that your identity and worth does not hinge solely on what the life change has taken away from you. Insight three. Distraction can be a healthy, productive coping mechanism. One narrative that has become pervasive, particularly in Western conversations about wellness, is that the only healthy way to move on from a bad experience is to fully confront it, to immerse yourself in your negative feelings. Otherwise, you risk having those emotions resurface in the future with even greater force. But recent research on resilience reveals a far more complex story. individual differences play a big role in determining what makes for a healthy response. The upshot of this research is that if directly and persistently confronting your negative emotions is working for you, stay the course. But if you're not gravitating toward that method and are doing fine, or if some combination of both approaching and avoiding your negative emotions is your sweet spot, there's no need to feel guilty or fear that you will pay for it later. If something doesn't keep resurfacing, it's unlikely that it will suddenly haunt you with greater intensity years down the line. On a related note, if in the wake of a change, you or your loved ones enter a state of denial, this reaction can actually be for the better in the short term. There is a grace in denial, write the grief researchers Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and David Kessler. It is nature's way of letting in only as much as we can handle. Denial can give us a powerful feeling of control, motivation, and hope, which is sometimes the lifeline we need to stay resilient during the hardest moments of our lives. One research study explored the recovery trajectories of patients with heart problems. Those with high levels of denial in the short term spent less time in intensive care and had fewer heart-related symptoms during their hospital stays. Insight 4. Change can serve as a critical moment of revelation, and armed with more knowledge, you can shape the road ahead. When a bad thing happens in our lives, it can feel like the world we know has been destroyed and that we're experiencing a personal apocalypse. But apocalypse comes from the Greek word apokalypsis, which actually means revelation. This etymology is instructive. Change can upend us, but it can also reveal things to us. The unique demands and stresses of a change can uncover surprising things about who we are, insights that once revealed, we can use to challenge our self-limiting beliefs or otherwise guide our path moving forward. Two stories of people I interviewed for my book come to mind. In one, the lingering impact of a biking accident reveals to a woman named Ingrid just how much shame she had been carrying around her family's heritage and indigenous practices. Once she understands this, she's able to rework her relationship with her belief system and challenge her own negative attitudes. In another, a woman named Tara, who has a deeply insecure attachment style, is forced to confront this aspect of herself when facing a big change in midlife. Dealing with this change is what gives her the impetus to take slow, deliberate steps toward opening herself up to others and letting them in. Over time, she has built a life that now seems to brim with love and is full of deep, secure relationships. By the way, many aspects of who we are far more malleable than we might realize. Tara's experience is corroborated by recent research showing that early childhood experiences are far less predictive of adult attachment styles than researchers previously thought. We can take active steps to reshape our attachment styles in adulthood. Insight 5. We are bad at predicting how we will respond to the big changes in our lives, and there's hope in that message. When we anticipate how we will respond to a change, we falsely assume that we'll be the same person in the future as we are today. This psychological bias is known as the end of history illusion, and it captures the idea that our brains reliably underestimate how much will change in the future, even though we fully acknowledge that we've changed considerably in the past. But of course, we are always changing, and a major disruption in our lives can accelerate these internal shifts. Simply put, when a big change happens to us, it can lead to profound change within us. There's a reason that I named my book The Other Side of Change, and that's because we become different people as a result of the experiences we endure. For this reason, you may be able to endure a negative change far better than you think at the outset, and that's because you're underestimating your own ability to evolve as a result of that change. The relevant question to ask yourself isn't, how will I navigate this change? But rather, how will I, with potentially new capabilities, values, and perspectives, navigate this change? By and large, the people I've interviewed over the years have felt profound gratitude and awe for the person they've become as a result of what they've been through. I was fairly skeptical of this on a personal front. I like to say that I have two allergies, soy and platitudes. But what was amazing is that as I was writing this book and going through my own personal change, I witnessed this own evolution within myself. In The Other Side of Change, I challenge my readers to rethink their relationship with change altogether. What if we started to see the big disruptions in our lives as a chance to reimagine ourselves, rather than as something to just endure? As a result of the research I've done and the interviews that I've conducted on this topic over the years, I've developed a far more positive relationship with change because I now see that there is so much opportunity within it. And my hope is that you will come to feel the same way.